Welcome to this week's edition of The Green. I'm your host, Tom Byrne. Delaware's legislative year ended in unprecedented fashion. The lack of a budget deal to fully address a $350 million budget shortfall forced lawmakers to blow past the June 30th deadline for passing a spending plan mandated by state law. A continuing resolution gave them an additional 3 days to come up with a compromise, which they did, combining increases in the realty transfer, alcohol, and tobacco taxes to avoid draconian cuts to education, health and social services, and grants to nonprofits, volunteer fire companies, and others. So what happened during a pair of marathon weekend sessions to get this budget across the finish line, and what else did or did not happen as the budget talks overshadowed almost everything at Legislative Hall? Our political reporter James Dawson was there the entire time, and after catching up on his sleep a little bit, he joins us now to sort it all out. Hi, James.
Hey, Tom.
All right, let's talk about this budget deal, the heart of which was something that wasn't on the table previously, at least this year, a 1% hike to the realty transfer tax. Walk us through the tax increase and how much it raises for the budget.
Sure. So if you've bought a home in Delaware since the mid-1960s, you've definitely paid this realty transfer tax. Right now, the state and Delaware's three counties split the 3% tax collected during the closing process, and the deal that lawmakers reached Sunday night raises that to 4% with all of that new money going directly to the state. Overall, it raises $45 million this coming year once it takes effect in August. And we should say that the deal, and you mentioned this earlier, also includes higher taxes on alcohol, tobacco, and vapor products. And combined, the state's going to rake in about $62 million.
So what are some of the concerns about using the realty transfer tax to solve this budget problem this year?
Yeah, so the biggest concern is that it's not as stable as other revenue sources. So home prices have historically been volatile, especially with the boom and bubble in the 2000s, as many people around here will remember. Delaware would cash in during these good years, but then take a hit when prices drop, housing becomes unaffordable, interest rates go up, something along those lines. But the most stable revenue sources ID'd by a state committee a couple years ago were the personal income tax and something Delaware does not have, which is a statewide property tax. Governor John Carney and Democrats campaigned pretty hard to hike the personal income tax this year. Obviously came up short. They didn't want to give Republicans significant prevailing wage changes.
So was it a bit of a surprise that they turned to the realty transfer tax at the end or not?
Yeah. I think it was a little bit. We hadn't really seen much of it this year, hadn't heard about it in talks, although to be fair, they weren't really giving us too much information. Negotiating through the media was one of their favorite phrases this year. They didn't want to do that. So it had been on the table a year or two ago to raise some revenue. Counties kind of rebelled against it because their share would have actually shifted, whereas this one, there's just a new 1% being added on. Counties still get their 1.5%.
So there's no harm to the counties at all, and they don't have to worry about trying to change their budget at the last minute. In the end, does this work, the realty transfer tax part of it, because it's something that neither side had drawn a line in the sand over, like prevailing wage, like personal income tax, and they were able to take those things off the table and then just get a deal done?
Yeah, when I talked to House Speaker Pete Schwarzkopf, when that deal was coming about, he said that as soon as prevailing wage and the income tax came off the table, then everything was crystal clear, smooth sailing. It does work for a bit, but it's really unclear whether or not the realty transfer tax is going to be enough to cover increased health care costs or education bills into the future. There are a couple task forces studying how to rein in Medicaid spending and the budget in general, and those recommendations are supposed to go before the General Assembly recesses next summer, but it's unclear if anything's going to come of it. Carney had said that he was going to overhaul the Department of Education this year to potentially save money too, but we haven't seen any kind of plan there either.
Yeah, so I guess, as you mentioned, this is a more volatile revenue stream than some of the ones that they were looking to make changes to. So in the end, it really doesn't address that structural issue, something that Governor Carney tried really to hold fast to during this session. But I guess when it comes down to it, did both sides just kind of back themselves into a corner because the alternative they were left with was these draconian cuts that they were getting blowback from all sides on?
I think that's a pretty fair assessment, though Republicans may have been more willing to cut than Democrats would have. Neither side backed down, as you mentioned. Speaker Schwarzkopf said, quote, "You don't give up what you believe in when you're being held hostage." He told that to us a couple weeks ago now, I guess, at this point,
right,
over prevailing wage changes. They hold that pretty deeply as one of their values. Democrats were willing to reform the way that prevailing wage is structured, you know, change how the survey is administered, things like that. But in return, the GOP would have let the income tax hike expire after a year. They didn't want to do that. They were just really at an impasse.
So beyond getting a deal done without shutting down the government, which happened elsewhere at the end of the month, can anyone kind of claim victory out of this whole thing?
Yeah, Republicans definitely can. I mean, neither side bent, but the GOP can campaign next year on how they rejected tax hikes that would have affected each Delawarean, not just home buyers. They can also say that they won significant spending cuts that the Joint Finance Committee had to make since they didn't have as much cash as they had thought they might get. That one extra seat the GOP picked up in the Senate last year really gave them a solid foothold here. It means Democrats would need to flip two votes instead of one to get a tax or fee increase through, and Republicans took advantage of it. Senate Minority Whip Greg Lavelle, who brokered much of the negotiations this year, is facing a Democratic challenger already. She held one event up in northern Newcastle County. They're trying to really shift the balance of power again, take out one of the GOP's heavy hitters. But Lavelle easily fended off a Democratic challenger 4 years ago. Dems might have to use this as a learning experience on how to work with the GOP, especially as some of their members in more conservative areas are getting older. They may be replaced with a Republican if they retire. Those are big concerns moving forward.
Even in the House, we saw with a stronger majority, it wasn't a done deal that they get things done because Andrea Bennett went and made a decision to vote against the personal income tax there. Not that it would have passed in the Senate anyway, but it just shows like how the dynamics are very different.
Right, exactly. I mean, Democrats have the supermajority, like you mentioned, in the House, but that requires extreme discipline and a cohesiveness that they just couldn't that takes a cohesiveness that they really couldn't form, to be honest.
Well, now those who are worried about cuts have to be happy because they, you know, were pretty bad if they had gone into effect, and they could have been really bad. And, you know, grant and aid recipients, including Delaware Public Media, still they'll wind up losing 20% off their budgets. Education cuts not quite as deep, but there's no match tax, which had been on the table before, a chance to raise property taxes without referendum to make up the losses. I guess the question is, like, you know, even though grant aid wasn't cut totally and the education cuts weren't as deep, what did happen was still pretty significant, could leave a bitter taste for many. Is that a concern for lawmakers that even with this deal, there's still a lot of people who are unhappy?
Oh, it absolutely is. And that's why restoring grants and aid and restoring at least some of the education cuts were among the top priorities to refund once they had a tax deal. I mean, no one wants to be on the hook for cutting grants to nonprofits, cutting school district funding, you know, whatever it might be. On the education side, lawmakers can at least make the argument that they faced, they being the Department of Education, faced some of the lightest cuts out of any state agency during the recession. I mean, its $1.4 billion budget is more than a third of all state spending, at least on the operations side. And Democrats seem as though they will campaign on these 20% cuts to grants and aid, saying that Republicans, stopped them from fully funding them. But it's really too early to tell what kind of long-term effects these are going to have.
Speaking of effects, with a potential budget shortfall again next year, where does this leave things in Leg Hall heading into an election year? How poisoned is the atmosphere right now? Can these two sides put all this aside, come back, and be a little bit more, I guess, not face such a difficult finish to session as they did this year?
Yeah, I really think that operating on this continuing resolution really sobered up lawmakers. I mean, they had until Monday night to get a deal before it expired, but got one relatively quickly on Sunday, and that was kind of surprising to us in the press room. There didn't seem to be any hurt feelings when I talked to people from all sides after the votes. It's really going to come down to whether or not Democrats will notice that they might have to give up a little bit more in negotiations to get what they want, or just, you know, work some creative thinking like they did this year.
Let's hit some non-budget issues. First, marijuana legalization. That did stall this year, but perhaps, you know, if you kind of take a step back, a little bit of a move forward for this issue in the state of Delaware.
Yeah, a little bit of background. Representative Helene Keeley says she's a few votes shy in getting this passed in the House, already passed out of a committee. But this isn't really a surprise. So since it changes criminal law, you need a two-thirds majority in both the House and the Senate to pass it. But both the House and Senate last Friday signed off on creating this task force that could weigh in on how a recreational marijuana program in Delaware would operate. So you've got pro and anti-marijuana advocates, members of law enforcement, and state officials serving on this group, and its report is due next January. Keeley is hoping that this might make Governor John Carney a little less nervous about the proposal. Right now he opposes it, but he did hold two town halls this year to keep the conversation going.
And could the revenue part of this make it a little bit more attractive than it would be otherwise?
Democrats aren't pushing that too much. It's in the realm of $20 million estimated once it's fully implemented. And fully implemented is really the linchpin here, because it could take a year, maybe two, maybe even longer, especially if you look at what happened with the medical marijuana program.
So it's not really a quick budget fix. It would just be something that might give you some additional revenue down
the road. It's just an added bonus is what, you know, they've been telling me.
How about the death penalty? There was a lot of talk early on about trying to passed something that would reinstate it. We did not hear very much about that toward the end.
Yeah, so it passed the House earlier this year, as it was expected to, and you know, the real test is going to be in the Senate. I mean, the upper chamber voted to repeal the death penalty twice over the past few years, even though it was by a pretty thin margin. And right now, the swing vote is Democrat Jack Walsh. It's his first Senate term after taking over for Karen Peterson, who really was the driving force behind these past repeal efforts. In December, he told the Delaware State News that he would oppose any bill reviving capital punishment. But a couple months ago, he told me that he's weighing his options now. So even if it does get Senate approval, it doesn't seem like Governor John Carney will sign it. He said that he'd consider supporting a bill that only allowed the death penalty if a cop or prison guard were killed. But he never explicitly said that he wouldn't sign a different version, meaning possibly this one. So that's still up in the air. I don't know if he just doesn't want to show his cards or what might be happening, but that's the situation.
While we're on the topic of Governor Carney, how about how he comes out of this first session that he kind of oversaw as governor? He didn't get the budget necessarily that he wanted, but he did get some of his priorities, opening up the Coastal Zone Act, getting rid of DDO, among others. Is his administration pleased with its first legislative scorecard?
Oh, they're definitely pleased with those accomplishments. And they're really trying to push them as the real story of the session instead of the fact that we had an unprecedented case of budget gridlock. Even on Friday night into Saturday morning, they were still pushing this. I mean, eliminating a cabinet agency like DDO is definitely a big move. But some of the more liberal lawmakers are concerned that there will be even less transparency with this new public-private partnership, even though the state will still put up millions of dollars to help fund it. That transition work is expected to be done early next year. But really, not raising the personal income tax still stands out as a glaring sore spot for the new governor, I'd say, especially since he held 20 town halls trying to push this pretty hard on the public. Something I thought was revealing was what Carney told us after he signed the budget. And here's what he said.
I think maybe my frustration was that I expected that people would more readily accept, you know, rational arguments around why you should do one thing or the other in the fiscal situation. And
yeah, so we're going to have to see whether or not he'll be able to overcome this hump and maybe be a bit more involved or hands-on when it comes to the budget process next year, if that's going to be his focus.
Because he did say that, like, he really wanted to change the inherent structural issues with the budget, and in the end that did not happen. And just hearing that, I think that seems to be like that's where his frustration lies, is that he said, let's not keep kicking the can down the road. Everybody said, yeah, let's not do that. But in the end, can kind of got kicked down the road a little bit more.
That's exactly what happened. I mean, if that's something that you campaign on, that was his big accomplishment that he did want to have go through the General Assembly this year.
Any final thoughts on this year?
I mean, there was a lot to unpack. It really was unlike anything I've seen in my nearly 5 years here. And, you know, the truly longtime observers I've talked to, they're just as flabbergasted. They've never seen anything like it. I think Democrats have a better understanding of how to negotiate in this new political landscape, and it is pretty new, as long as numbers don't change you know, in the next couple of years. And the GOP have definitely made themselves heard. Watch for them to be more vocal next year, especially since we're getting close to election season.
All right, James Dawson, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
And we do have to note, this is the final time we'll be talking politics with James. He's heading back home to Idaho to, later this month, become news director at Boise State Public Radio. So, James, congratulations. And on behalf of the staff here at Delaware Public Media, and I'm sure our audience, thanks for all the work you put in these last 5 years covering the legislature and state politics here in Delaware. We've really appreciated it.
Thanks, Tom. It's been great.
The Green continues in just a moment with a look at what happened to leases for wind farms off the First State Coast. Stick around for that. You're listening to Delaware Public Media.